2020 was going to be the Olympic year, and being involved in the sports ministry, the groups I was involved in, we had all these dreams and plans. We had a vision to reach a million Japanese people with the gospel during the Olympic and Paralympic Games. I'm not sure if you remember 2020. Yeah, we didn't get the Olympics. We got COVID. The Games were delayed by a year, and we thought, okay, that's a year to prepare, get ready. So we were preparing and praying. And as we got closer into 2021, we still were like, okay, this is going to be, we'll adjust some things, but it's still going to be okay. And actually, as we got closer and closer to the start of the Games, restrictions started to come in. So first of all, it was no outdoor visitors. We thought, okay, so we can't have the outdoor, we can't have the team from overseas coming in, outdoor overseas visitors, no overseas teams. We'll just mobilize the church in Japan. We'll travel around the prefectures and do training, and no traveling across prefecture borders. And we thought, okay, well, we'll just do Zoom stuff. We'll encourage churches to do public viewings and no public viewings. For a while, okay, but there's still the athletes finish and we have the Olympic chaplains. Okay, you can have three, actually you can have one Olympic chaplain. Well, at least one is better than well, actually the chaplains are not allowed into the Olympic Village in case of an emergency. And no one knew what an emergency looked like for a Christian athlete. So basically, as we got closer to the Games, all of our dreams, all of our plans just came falling apart around us. It was a really hard time. There's a lot of confusion, and you know, we've been praying for the whole of 2020 and 2021 and before that, and it felt like God was just being silent. And I don't know, for you guys here in Leeds, how it was those years, if you had times when it felt like God was not listening to your prayers, or if you've had times in your own life, but personally or as a church, where it's felt like you've been really seeking God and praying, and we just can't hear him. He seems to be silent. He's either watching by and deciding not to act, or he's busy with something else, or he's not paying attention. Maybe he's punishing us for something we don't know we've done. What's going on? We're really hard and confusing. Something else that happened to me during COVID time is I got a new hobby. I'm not sure if you've got any COVID hobbies. This is my COVID hobby called Tenugiri. What's it called? This is the first one I got. This one's pretty fun. Some of them are kind of more seasonal. Some of them are more kind of to do with different festive, cool kind of times of year, different festivities. This one is quite profound to me. I know you're thinking though, okay Levi, what are these though? We can't see. And that's the thing, you see with Tenugiri, when you go into a shop, they will be folded up like this on display. But as soon as you go in, one of the shopkeepers will say to you, no, take one and open it up. Because if you only see a little bit, you don't understand what it is. It's only when you open up and you get the whole picture that you realize what was going on. And I came to see, actually, it's similar with what was going on with COVID, that we were looking at the one little square, not knowing what was happening, but actually, God really was working. He had a much bigger picture that he was creating. We just couldn't see it. But the thing here is that this is not just an idea I came up with, kind of looking at Japanese cloths. This is something that's taught in the Bible. I think it's something we see actually very clearly in this book of Esther, the reading we had today. Which might surprise you, because I don't know if you know much about the book of Esther, but it's famous. Esther, the book of Esther, because the book of Esther is the one book of the Bible where God is not mentioned at all. There is no mention of God, of the Lord, of Jehovah Jireh, or any of his names or titles are not mentioned. Not even angels get mentioned in the book of Esther. What you get in Esther is that famous passage you might know, chapter 4, towards the end, where Mordecai is talking to Esther and he says, who knows? Maybe you were raised up for this moment, and you need to go and speak up for your people. And Esther says, okay, I will go before the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. And it's this really awesome, powerful moment. Mordecai with his encouragement and his wisdom, and Esther full of bravery. But actually, if that was all we had of the story, you would think then, this is a type of story about those times when God is just silent, he's by the side, and we have to work by our own bravery, our own courage, and we have to rescue ourselves. But actually, in the book of Esther, like every book of scripture, God is at work, in the background, leading people to do things, and sometimes to not do things for his purposes. So I'm going to take us really quickly through the book. You can kind of flick through if you want, but just to remind us of the story, and I think as we do, we will see where God is at work here. So the book of Esther begins chapter 1. We get introduced to King Xerxes. We find out King Xerxes, not only is he not a great king, he's not really a nice person. He's very proud, he's very arrogant, he likes to party, he's very wasteful with his money. He throws this kind of display for 180 days, like half a year, he's just showing off how much money he has. Then he follows that with a big week-long banquet with all his friends. At the end of the banquet, he's had too much to drink. He decides he wants to show off to all of his friends and officials how beautiful his wife is. So he calls for his queen, Vashti, to come and say, look, I want to show you off to my friends. And she, I think reasonably, says no. The king's response is to get so angry, he's just outraged, and he talks to his advisors, and they say, well, the only reasonable thing to do is to make it illegal for the queen to ever come into your presence, because otherwise, the women all around your empire will be dishonoring their husbands. And the king is like, that's a great idea, let's do that. So he does that, he makes it illegal for the queen to even come before him. And then we get to chapter 2, the king calms down a bit, realizes, remembers what he's done, and says, oh, now I can never see my queen. And his officials again come to him and say, well, look, you have this massive empire. It stretches over like half the world. Just take beautiful women from all the countries you rule, and you can choose one who gets to be your queen. And again, he thinks that's a great idea, let's do that. And that's where we meet Esther. Esther has been raised by her uncle Mordecai. Esther comes in, she's beautiful, and she goes through this selection process, and she is chosen to be the next queen. So she's the queen, and then at the end of chapter 2, we get this little mention of a time when two people, these guys, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's kind of workers, wanted to try to kill the king. For some reason, and Mordecai overhears this plan, and he tells Esther, he tells the king, and the plan is stopped. The plot to assassinate him is stopped. Now at this time, obviously, they're taking a risk. They don't know how far this plot goes. If they're going to get trying to stop it, maybe they're going to get in trouble, maybe they're in danger. They take a risk, they do what they think is right, and not only is nothing done for them, but actually from here on in, the story gets worse and worse. So chapter 3, we discover Haman. Haman is made second in command of the country, and Haman decides everyone has to bow down before him to show respect. But Mordecai refuses to do this, and Haman's response is to go, well, if you're not going to respect me, I'm going to get you killed. Not only that, I'm going to get your entire people killed. He decides to set his plot to kill the whole Jewish people. And so that's when we get to chapter 4, where Mordecai is speaking to Esther and saying, you need to go and speak up to the king. Tell him that you are Jewish, that this is your people who are in danger. And she says, okay, I will go. And she goes to the king, and he's happy to see her, and he says, what do you want? I'll give you anything you want. She says, I want to have a banquet. They have a banquet of her, just her, King Xerxes, and Haman. They have a banquet together, and she says, okay, tomorrow I'm going to free another banquet. Can you come again? And then I'll make a request. So then, Haman goes home, and he's absolutely buzzing. He's so excited. He's like, the king loves me, the queen loves me, everyone loves me. Sees Mordecai. Oh, I hate Mordecai. I hate him so much. He goes home, kind of all angry, and his wife is like, what are you doing? Just get a pole in the morning to put Mordecai on, and then go and see the king, get his permission to kill Mordecai, enjoy the banquet, it'll be a great day. So this is how the story is going. And then we get to the bit we read in chapter 6, where the king can't sleep. For some reason, all the nights in the year, he can't sleep. And out of all the things he could have brought to him, he has the history book brought to him. Now, he's a proud man, he probably wants to remember some of his stories, but I think it's still worth noting that this is what is happening in the story. And then he has the story read to him, and that's when he realizes that back, this story back in chapter 2, when Mordecai saved his life, nothing was done for him. And that's the exact moment when Haman is coming in to ask for permission to kill Mordecai. And we get this kind of very comical moment where the king says to Mordecai, the king says to Haman, what shall I do for the man who honors me? And Haman thinks, he has to talk about me. This is me, this is brilliant. So he lists off these things, like you should do this, get a horse, the king's red on, get the king's robe, put him on the guy, put him on the horse, put him on the road through the city. You can imagine Haman saying this, thinking like, this is going to be an amazing day. And then the king says, chapter 6, verse 10, go at once. The king commanded Haman, get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have recommended. And the whole story turns in this moment. The Jewish people are saved. Haman's plot is overthrown. Mordecai and Esther are honored. The story goes on a little bit. Did you see how actually this all hinged on this point back at the end of chapter 2, where God seemed to be silent, where God seemed to just be not even present in the story. But he was present, waiting, leading for the exact right moment to bring about salvation for his people and to rescue them. Mordecai is incredibly wise. Esther is incredibly brave. They are both good examples of what it means to be followers of God. But they're actually not the hero of the story. God, who remains silent, is the hero of the story, and of all the stories. And so, you may not be wondering that, okay, but so what about us today, here in Leeds 2024? What about me and my dream to go back to Japan? What does this mean for us? Well, I think there's three things it means, not just because this is a Baptist church, I think there really are three things. They don't illustrate, I'm afraid. But let's see if I can make them illustrate on the spot. Okay, so the first one, if we go to the slide, is prayer. This is what we did actually during the Olympic Games. We realized we can't do any of the things we wanted to do. We can't reach a million Japanese people with the gospel. Let's try to raise a million hours of prayer. We have many Zoom meetings praying together for Japan. People coming from around the world, all around Japan. It was an incredible time. And actually, I was speaking to one of the people who was involved in this afterwards. I was on the team having to arrange some meetings and we were talking. And this Japanese pastor said, actually, you know what, these last few weeks doing all these prayer meetings has been like a foretaste of heaven. Because we were praying people from around the world, and I was praying people from around Japan, who normally I would not be doing ministry with, I would not be praying together or praising together, people from different churches and denominations and backgrounds. But we were all praying together to pray, and it was a real blessing. So when God seems to be silent, we speak out to him, we pray. The next thing we do, bring up the next slide, is that we speak up. And we do indeed, even when God seems to be silent, when we don't hear him instantly answering our prayers, we keep speaking. Sorry if you've heard this story before, but I'm going to share it again because it's one of my favorites. So this was back in the summer, I think, last year. We were doing this event at the Friday Terrace place you saw. We had these two girls come in from America for a few weeks, ballerinas, and that's why they look taller than me because they work on their toes. Just want to make that clear. But they were a ballerina and a classical pianist, and they did these pieces where one of them would play and the other one would dance, and then they would share about how these, the music or the dance, showed something of God and the gospel. The thing is, they were sharing this in English, and I was asked very last minute to be the one to translate it into Japanese. Now my Japanese is mostly okay, mine and I kind of get by day to day, but these girls were talking about things like this next piece is a polonaise set in minor C, reminiscent of a French imperial march, with underflowing something something and kind of peacocks turning into phoenixes and nightingales and all this stuff, and I had no idea what I was doing. So I saw it, I was like, okay God, if ever I needed you to just supernaturally have me in Japanese, this is it. This is for your kingdom, God. Please have me. I messaged some friends and please pray for me now. prayed, and it was an absolute train wreck. It was disaster. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I was trying to think of words. At one point, even someone who was in the audience shouted out like a better suggestion for the translation. It was just terrible. We got through, and I thought, okay, well, I don't know what was happening there. I prayed, but it seems not answered. But, you know, just shake it off. Let's move on. We go to the next slide. The girl kind of on the right side in the denim jacket, Kamiko Chan, she had come along, she was a high school student, she loved ballet, she really connected with these two girls. She had kind of picked up from what I was sharing that they kind of kept talking about God a lot. So she was just intrigued. She said, you love ballet, you talk about God, what's going on? She got to know them, they invited her to go to church, and then when she went to church, she heard the gospel of Jesus Christ preached, and she said, I believe, I want to be baptized. And a few weeks later, after doing some baptism classes, she got baptized. So I was there thinking in this moment, God is not answering my prayers, because I wanted to be able to speak Japanese really well. I wanted people to see me being really gifted and able, and I thought, that's what God needs for his kingdom. But actually, God was working in the background, silently, creating something better than what I could have done. It was like me again looking, seeing this little square, thinking, well, this is kind of okay, but actually, what is it going to be? And God was just in the background, silently creating something much more beautiful and much bigger and better than I was dreaming or able to think of. So we speak to God, we speak for God, and a final one, just as we finish. Final slide. Whenever God seems to be silent, we keep trusting in him. Or in the words of John 15, we keep abiding in him. Just to finish on this, this is actually just outside the Friday Terrace space we have. There's a vine out there, or a vineyard, it's like a vine. And we used to think it was a dead vine because, well, it looked dead. I'm not a forest, but it looked very dead vine. My dad thought, well, it still looks cool, even though this is a dead vine, it still looks cool in the house, let's leave it. When we came back from our wedding, we had a team who came from America to help with the wedding, and they came and we did a final kind of house church on the Sunday they left. And we were thrown outside and discovered that this vine, which we thought it was dead, had produced grapes, these massive, huge grapes. And not only that, but there was an exact number of grapes for the number of people who were gathered in the church. And I'm fairly cynical at heart, but even I couldn't kind of help hearing God say, abide in me. Jesus, if you abide in me, you will be through. Apart from you, you can't. So even in the times when God is silent, we keep trusting in him, we keep reminding ourselves of the gospel, believing and trusting that he's working in the background, producing more than we could imagine. Sometimes we see a little bit and we kind of have no idea what's going on, and we trust that God is still creating something. He is still reigning over the earth and building his kingdom. So please keep praying for Japan, and please keep reminding myself and my of the gospel of Jesus. Keep us abiding in him and keep taking those opportunities to speak up, to share the gospel in simple ways, even maybe as you were invited to today to take some international students round to your house for dinner. These are the ways in which God is building his kingdom. It's not fancy, it's not flashy, it's not that impressive. You might not look like the hero, but God is building his kingdom.